When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Today, VAR is a Luton fan. Football gods hate the Sky Blues. We ran up all the weekend's key developments, from Man United Coventry and the Cup, from cakewalk to custard pies, to Chelsea's missed opportunities, to the Premier League with the title race latest, Burnley's bid to beat the drop, and sympathy for Nottingham Forest having a blowout, failing to score, and then firing hasty messages at the ex. We've all been there. All that and more in this Totally Football Show. Hey, listener, it's Monday, 22nd of April. Slightly later Totally Football Show for you today, but one that I think you'll say is worth the wait as we bring you Carl Anker. Hi, Carl.
Hi, James.
Charlie Eccleshare as well.
Hello.
Good morning to you, Charlie. And Jay Harris.
Good morning, James.
Nice to see you, Jay. You were at, Brentford-Luton?
Luton-Brentford.
That was on Saturday. Charlie, you were all over football.
Yeah, just generally.
Just generally. And Carl, it was you that was sat at Wembley for...
I was indeed.
Another clown car spectacular. Magnificent.
Comedy of errors.
Magnificent. So much to talk about, you know, between that and your Forest Tweetgate and all the other excitements. Did this weekend, shall I start off with the traditional, did this weekend tell us something that we didn't previously know? Carl, you go first.
Are we calling it Tweetgate? Is this
the... I don't know. It's a bit lazy, to be fair. I added a gate to tweet, which they're no longer even called.
I witnessed the initial reaction to it at Wembley Stadium.
Oh, yeah.
And my initial reaction was, surely someone clearly shouldn't be allowed to have the password, has the password, and ran off with that.
Why not? It's his club.
Someone surely... cooler heads should have prevailed in this circumstance.
Forest clearly believe that this has gone beyond.
Imagine being the poor, you know, person that runs Nottingham Forest Twitter account and you just get a message saying the boss is taking over.
And then being us. And what's the feedback been like?
It's been all right. Yeah, it's a mixed bag. Been universally negative. There are a lot of people pushing back saying, yeah, our club is fed up with VAR, etc. And you know, citing similar injustices. We'll get on to all of that. We'll get on to all of that because vast as that story was, probably the FA Cup was the bigger tale. So let's begin with events Saturday and Sunday as the Manchester sides made their way through to another FA Cup final.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Might be they who win it. It's on to Wright. He's got Sims at the far post. Coventry on the attack. It's in! It's one of the most remarkable comebacks in FA Cup history. Coventry City of the Championship are just about to knock out the mighty Manchester United in stoppage time at the end of extra time. Well, Manchester United, a few of the fans left when that goal went in. They might wish they'd come back in now because that goal has been torpedoed.
Indeed, another all-Manchester final in the FA Cup awaits us after a somewhat knackered Man City beat a wasteful Chelsea on Saturday. Sunday, meanwhile, Man United survived against Coventry in their doomed comeback. Let's start with that game in all its epic, tragic magnificence. First off, how many people actually gave up on this game after 2-0, 3-0 Man United? I've got my hands up.
Yeah, I didn't see the whole thing. I will confess.
We'll confess, yeah.
Luckily, Carl was there, locked into his seat, for a game that in many ways ticked all the FA Cup boxes. You had your lower league team against big league team. You had a stirring comeback. You had fans in tears at the end. You had Man United going from 3-0 up to 3-3. And then Coventry to 4-3 in the last minute, as we just heard. But then, to the victor, the spoiled goal celebration.
Indeed, Indeed. A goal that was described as offside by a toenail by Mark Robbins afterwards.
Yeah,
right. And a goal that, I mean, I felt partially concussed after it initially went in because I didn't, you know, just highlighting a very large paragraph in my on my desktop, like, delete, and I need to rewrite my piece and go for it. It was a truly bizarre calamity. Manchester United have had numerous calamities this season. I think they're tied with Luton and a number of other teams for the most games where they've been ahead by two goals and then managed to not win.
Right.
And had
three in this.
Had it been the VAR not ruled this one to be offside, it would have been, we've been record holders.
Technically they didn't win, of course, because penalties is ruled a
draw.
Incidentally, and ruled us almost a separate game. Because we saw Thursday night with Amy Martinez getting a second yellow and it not counting. And apparently, although I missed this in the penalty shootout, apparently Onana also picked up a yellow.
He did. That Martinez gets banned because of it, but FA rules are different, so Onana isn't banned.
Good Lord.
For the FA Cup final.
Good Lord.
But he did. Yeah, he was quite punchy with what he was doing. I don't know if you saw he was really going for some of the commentary takers.
Very animated. He talked to Andy Mitten in the mix zone and others afterwards, and he said, you know, he had some tricks for the penalty shootout. He was then asked what those tricks were, and then very much, I'm not telling you. My teammates know what my tricks are, but I'm not going to divulge.
Well, they proved effective.
They did. It was, this Manchester United team,
Pin that for a second. Let's talk about commentary, because my word, they're fans of... earned at least that. Mm-hmm. What a disappointment for them. What would have been one of the great FA Cup sporting moments for them, overturned, as you say, on a toenail, although opinion will be divided. There'll be those who say if it's offside by a toenail, it's still offside. Commentary, they don't have VAR in the Championship, so this must be... they're not used, I guess. I don't know. I hope I'm not being patronising. But a lot of commentary fans won't have had these kind of crushing... disappointments before.
That's really true. I mean, you get so used now as a regular Premier League watcher to tempering your celebrations. It's terrible, but you do. Whereas, yeah, you're right. If you're not used to that, maybe you don't so much. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe they had the moment of ecstasy that you wouldn't have, because as often, genuinely, as a Premier League fan, you're kind of hedging. You're kind of like, oh, I don't want to go overboard. But this is such a good example, by the way, of why I always say when you're in the ground, that's not even a goal you would think to hedge necessarily, because it happens so much further back. You know, there's so much going on. It's not like, there are some goals that clearly are like, this is getting VAR'd to sh-. You know, a goal mouth scramble one that looks like it's offside in the final phase. You're like, I mean, I'm not really going to celebrate here. What's the point? This wasn't one of those. This is what I mean about the fact that no goal is really safe when you're there live, because there could always be something that happened earlier on that to the naked eye, especially if your vantage point isn't amazing, you're just not going to see.
Carl, amongst the Man United doing Man United things, what about Coventry's extraordinary comeback from 3-0 down?
Remarkable. Robin's post-game press conference said, sometimes it's easier to play when you're 3-0 down because there's, I mean, you can have a bit more abandon.
Second most dangerous lead in football, of course.
Duncan Alexander listening and chuckling warmly. And I think they would... they had two or three opportunities in the first half when they won the ball back quickly, but weren't ambitious, courageous, however you want to call it, in trying to break the lines with that final pass. Where in the second half, in particular, they just went for it a little bit more. The substitutions they made were very, very astute. And Simmons, with his first goal, gave him a chance, and then you get a deflected off it in from O'Hare. And then they really went for it. The last 15 minutes of regulation time, they were particularly hammering Manchester United's left side. Marcus Rashford wasn't really tracking back. And we know Aaron Wan-Bissaka's weaknesses when he's defending space rather than defending a player with the ball. And they were really, really going for that sort of cutback cross, which we know Manchester United have been particularly vulnerable to as well. So if it hadn't been for Diogo Dalot being very awake to the fact that Coventry kept going for this one particular method, I think they could have got a goal in regulation time as well. So, yeah, a turnaround from being braver on the ball when they won it back, some really, really smart substitutions, and really exploiting two out-of-form and low-in-confidence players, and just really going down one particular flank, really brought that turnaround for Coventry, in my opinion. Yeah. And Robbins was... he said it is what it is on multiple occasions after the game. And he also mentioned the fact that Coventry nearly went up last season to the Premier League and you know, couldn't quite get over the line against Luton. And he was very very calm, spoke really, really well, said this is a project, and sometimes you do have a setback, but also if we believe in what we're doing, keep working hard, then we're going to get there eventually.
Right. They're 9 points behind Norwich in this year's race to the playoffs, but they do have two games in hand on the Canaries. I'm not sure how what happened this weekend is going to impact on all of that. Obviously, it's a bit of a stretch now, and one hopes that they'll be able to keep the elements of this remarkable series of campaigns, and not least Ellis Sims, in their in their team going forward. Sorry, Jay.
No, I was just going to quickly say the fact that Coventry are kind of like the biggest story in and amongst all of this kind of says a lot about how the game went, and the celebrations at full time tells you everything that you need to know. Eriksen was the only player who ran over to Rasmus Højlund. I remember seeing Carl's tweet about Anthony's backward running dance, cupping his ears to the commentary players. It's one of those occasions where Man United are in a cup final, but no one's really happy or pleased. You know, Bruno Fernandes and Harry Maguire were talking to ITV afterwards, and you know, Harry Maguire used the word "we are professional" in the first half, and kind of that illusion that in the second half they just completely lost their heads. We're in a cup final, you've got a chance to win silverware, yet everybody's just moping. I think that kind of says it all.
Well, Højlund's celebration was a bit like, well done, he's 13. And the fact that I think the rest of the United players seem to agree with that. I mean, I was genuinely curious, as it looked more and more, as it turned and it looked like United were going to win the shootout, I was really curious to see what they would do, because obviously muscle memory just tells you, win a penalty shootout, everyone runs from the halfway line. The fact that they didn't, like, I kind of thought, and also, you know, when you play a game of football, when you're up against a team, you often, there becomes a bit of needle, because you start to hate the fact that we're going to be humiliated by these guys. So actually, you get really fired up.
Right.
So I thought, even though there might be some embarrassment, they will still do that. They'll all run and congratulate the player. The fact they did it was extraordinary to watch that they all kind of just skulked away, like, yeah, let's just get out of here and forget this ever happened.
There was a very swift exit from, I'd say, a couple thousand Manchester United fans as well. And Manchester United players got off the field very, very quickly. And I took a photograph not long after. And yeah, if you gave that to a complete stranger to football and said one of these teams won an FA Cup semi-final and one of them didn't, you go, oh, the blue team was successful. Because, I mean, Ten Hag was asked, would he understand why United fans were embarrassed by that victory? And he said, no, I reject the notion of being embarrassed. You should focus on the achievement, which is back-to-back FA Cup finals. But from what I've seen talking to United fans who made the way out of Wembley and a number of comments online, misery and downtroddenness and just a deep feeling of ennui.
It is amazing that they could win the FA Cup. You know, this could end with them beating City to win the FA Cup. It feels obviously hugely unlikely at this point, but yeah, that they are still in the FA Cup finals.
Indeed.
Yeah, it really didn't feel like that.
Carl, Monday night's penalty spot shenanigans for Chelsea were seen as very much a warning sign for the state of their dressing room. Are there any concerns about the fact that this lack of celebrations just means that United don't really have much spirit to them neither?
I think a lot of the question is, what was Anthony playing at? So the one person who did celebrate...
He came on when they were 3-0 up.
And he did.
Yeah.
He did. He did. He came on when they were 3-0 up and he's...
Is that coincidental?
I would say no. He had a particularly bad substitute appearance. There have been questions over his, because he's so one-footed and he has so many touches on his left, which means the classic cup final. Oh, you're winning. Go run it in the corner. He can't, because even when he's running towards the corner, he's still got the ball on his left foot,
showing
the defender the ball is here, and it's just a wonderful gift wrapped present. So on more than one occasion in those last 15, 20 minutes, he gave the ball away. Obviously, penalty shootout, he's running away from Coventry players, giving this with his ears, cupping them. And then you can see Harry Maguire, as a professional, going over the Coventry players, offering them a handshake, saying,
I mean, that is embarrassing to be doing that, isn't it? To be cupping ears.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were talking about the handshake.
No, it's great. I mean, that's what you should be doing. But I mean, yeah, you've come on, read a lot, you've got away with one.
Yeah.
Just don't do that. But that's, I guess, what I mean about the muscle memory. Clearly, he's that kind of player. He's going to taunt, he's just going to do that, whatever had happened.
I've got a small crumb of comfort for Man United fans. Okay. This is from John McKenzie's Twitter account. Only 18 shots faced by Man United.
Oh.
The first time they've not conceded 20-plus shots in a game since the FA Cup tie against Forest on February the 9th. So nine games, 20 plus shots at least.
And this is in 120 minutes.
And that's, yeah, 120 minutes.
There you go. Because Carl, I believe your deleted passage talked about how this was United's most measured and controlled performance of the
Correct. Those words in particular.
All right. Well,
I mean, I've been critical of United on this podcast, and people have said, "Oh, you're too harsh on United." And I've been surprised speaking to quite a few United fans. They're sort of like, before this game, they're kind of like, "Yeah, Ten Hag's not been great, but we've had injuries, and there are lots of young players, and yeah, I'd sort of give him a chance," which has stunned me as an outsider, because I watch this team, and I'm like, they are. I know they've had injuries. I know, and that's hard, and there've been other things going on, but they're a complete mess. And I'm not telling fans how they should feel. I'm just genuinely stunned that there is that kind of goodwill. I kind of feel like, not to go Gary Neville, but like, this is Manchester United. Have Man United fans just become so accepting of mediocrity that it's
even
like...
Even Roy Keane is disliking them now.
Keane is disliking... I do think things will swing further towards your perspective after this result.
Yeah.
Ten Hag quite literally used the words, "We got away with this one."
Oh, did he?
We got away with one. And I do think, you know, the Ten Hag argument, he said he's not really concerned with what outsiders say. He's more concerned with the fact that he has not been able to pick his best team in 18 months in his mind. Yeah. And if you continue that logic, I'm sure Ten Hag would say, "Well, I played a defensive midfielder at centre back, and I'm still having to play a right back at left back, and that's why things got a bit awkward." However, just the mood amongst those leaving Wembley at full time, Jamie Carragher said several months ago that Erik ten Hag was an interim manager, and it was up to him to recognise that he was an interim manager and start interviewing for his job properly. If that is the case, or if you are of that argument, this FA Cup semi-final where Sir Jim Ratcliffe has just run the London Marathon and then come in the second half to watch his team play and then watch this collapse, that's a bad thing in your interview process.
Yeah, Ten Hag has a year left on his contract, right? So it might be expensive it might be expensive to get rid of him, but really you've got a perfect opportunity this summer to rip the cord, right? Because otherwise you go into next season, you either give him a new contract, which it feels like no one really wants that at the moment, or you just have a manager who has a year left on his deal and is a lame duck.
Briefly, Carl, what we've been hearing is that for all these comments, Ten Hag is currently the likeliest person to be on the United bench at the start of next season. Is that still the case, do you think?
I couldn't tell you. We're talking at 9:30 and I probably have to make some phone calls.
Right, not just to double check this weekend, but in general, it's not that they have somebody lined up. It's not that the person who makes that decision, or maybe they are.
It's not like Louis van Gaal entering the FA Cup final and everyone knows Jose Mourinho is in the background. It's not like the final days of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, where there was a Mauricio Pochettino-shaped spectre over him, or an Antonio Conte-shaped spectre over him, as it was for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. There's no outstanding candidate for the Manchester United role at the moment.
Which feels like the only thing that could save Ten Hag in a way.
I think if you did a big list of reasons why Erik ten Hag is going to keep his job, there are four or five things you would list before you would say he is doing a good job.
Only four or five. Okay. Well, there'll be more from Carl on Talk of the Devils.
We recorded that late last night and we were very tired and quite sad. So it'll be darker in tone.
Okay.
I'm very sorry.
Oh, well, that's all right. United have Premier League action coming up this midweek. They are hosting Sheffield United Old Trafford.
Yes, indeed.
What could possibly go wrong?
The shots face derby.
Indeed.
20 plus shots on target.
Excellent. Then in a month, they'll take on Man City, who we should mention because they are also in the final after their 1-0 win over Chelsea. The goal coming from Bernardo Silva. Not a great week this for aspiring penalty taker Nicholas Jackson. Would you say?
No, not at all. If you're going to cause such a ruckus like you did on Monday and, you know, create all these headlines about divisions in the dressing room, etc., and try and make out that you're the man when your team's 4-0 up, you've got to put the chances away that he had on Saturday. And everybody's been saying this all year. I've said it as well. His movement is great and you can definitely see he used to play at left wing, so he's still very much new to the centre forward.
Central midfield as well.
Yeah. And, you can see there's promise there, but in these moments, especially after what happened on Monday, you just have to take those chances.
Mm. He feels one good preseason, and this is clutching at straws. He feels one good preseason away from being the product that Chelsea need.
Yeah.
It's very, very hard. Strikers don't become clinical overnight, but if he just increases a little bit more consistency in his ball striking, I think he could be.
He gets a lot of chance, doesn't he? He's always high.
And it's just the way he strikes the ball can be very erratic, particularly in these crucial moments. But there's so much to his play that is otherwise fantastic. And he's one of, we're definitely seeing a striker shortage across Europe. And this was one of many things Arsene Wenger warned us about when he was in the final days of his Arsenal managerial stint.
Football's Cassandra.
He truly was, is, shall we say.
Sorry, Arsene warned us that we were going to have a dearth of strikers.
So I want to say in 2013, Amy Lawrence wrote a fantastic piece and reference some quotes from Arsene Wenger, and this was around about time Arsenal were linked to Gonzalo Higuain,
Benzema
and whatnot, and Wenger said words to the effect of the strikers that everyone wants to purchase are now going to come more from South America, because the way players are being coached in Western Europe about universality and midfield play and one touch movement, you sort of coach out that certain je ne sais quoi that makes a number nine, that sort of selfishness. And lo and behold, it's 2024, and there are loads of inside forwards, and there are loads of box to box midfielders who can be a number 10 in certain situations, but there are fewer number nines. And Nicholas Jackson feels like one of those players who, I mean, he would be brilliant in a 4-4-2,
with a big guy next to him, winning knockdowns for
he could do the knock. Hoyland, and they're true. I'd say Darwin Nunez feels like another striker who would be brilliant in a 4-4-2, because there are so many things we demand from a modern number nine now, that you're seeing teams like Chelsea, you're seeing teams like Manchester United going, well, if you're seeing, you know, even Arsenal with Gabriel Jesus, of players, of teams going, this person can do 7 out of the 10 things I want from a striker. I'll put them in the system, and okay, they don't finish as many chances as I want, but we'll reconfigure the rest of our team to chip in, which, I mean, it can work, as we've seen with Arsenal to a degree this season, but it can make for these very frustrating moments if you're a Chelsea fan, where the striker is doing, you know, 7 out of 10 of the things you want, cannot do the thing striker's supposed to do, which is put the ball in the back of the net.
All right.
And Chelsea's Wembley curse just rolls on.
Was it 5 out of 6 they haven't
five
scored?
5 out of 6 games at Wembley they failed to score. Just to repeat what you just said. A few extra words in case anyone missed it. And this against a subpar Man City.
Yeah.
Understandably, after 120 minutes on Wednesday against Real Madrid, was a real chance. Chelsea, among the weekend's refereeing controversies, they were upset that Jack Grealish wasn't penalised for a handball.
I think this is more of a penalty than the Wan-Bissaka one. His arm's in a more unnatural position.
And it's coming to him from further away.
Yeah.
Better from Chelsea then. They are, as they exit the FA Cup, ninth in the Premier League, but only 3 points off Newcastle in sixth with a game in hand.
But that game in hand is against Arsenal tomorrow, right? And I'm pretty certain they've still got a couple of other tough teams.
They've
coming
got
up.
Villa coming up on the weekend, I think.
Yeah, and they've still got to play Tottenham as well.
Yeah, but they are more in it than it seems because they've only played 31 games.
They do tend to play better against the teams that actually give them space and want to attack.
Yeah, I mean, they drew with City twice in the league games, so I don't think tomorrow, I mean, I'm jumping ahead, but I don't think that's a foregone conclusion. No. As Jay says, that's the kind of game they like. Mm. And that's why I felt this game they would have a chance, especially against a City, as you say, that were coming off the back of that big European game, certainly looked leggy. I think it's kind of the best time, really, they could have asked to play City, that given that context. And they had the chances. This was a game they could easily have won.
Instead, it's City who goes through to that final with Man United. City also in action midweek on Thursday, when they're going to be down at the Amex, taking on Brighton. Very good. Should we move on to the weekend's Premier League fun?
Mm-hmm. Let's just dig into the main event.
Tony Evans here, host of Walk On, your dedicated Liverpool podcast from The Athletic. Join us once a week through the Premier League title running as the Reds look to give Jürgen Klopp a perfect sign-off. On hand to offer their expert insight, we have James Pearce.
Yeah, I'm optimistic.
And Simon Hughes.
It's going to be fascinating.
Listen for free wherever you get your podcasts. Just search Walk On.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Listeners, the Scottish Cup final is set. It's going to be Rangers against Celtic. Jay, there you go. Celtic winning through in a penalty shootout themselves. Well, Joe Hart busy in this one. He had a penalty which would have won it for the Hoops, but instead missed it, but then redeemed himself with a save in sudden death, and through they go to the final to take on, as I say, Rangers. Meanwhile, in the Championship, totting up at both ends of the table, with Sheffield Wednesday actually moving out of the relegation zone on Sunday. You know what Muric did last weekend when he kind of air-kicked? Mm. Yeah, that happened to Blackburn goalkeeper Ainsley Piers. Dean Henderson as well.
Mm. Really in vogue at the moment, isn't it? Yeah. You get these sort of goalkeeping trends. Why should ask Sasha?
I'm gonna
Carl's got a theory.
It's spring. Okay. Sun's in your eyes. You know, there were two or three right at the start of the FA Cup game. Oh, Wembley Shadow's back. So maybe it's just goalkeepers having the sun in their eyes from the changing seasons. That's my soft theory for now.
we'll run with that one. Full-time Europe meantime. The Athletic's women's football podcast is out on Tuesday. They've got loads to talk about, not least the huge result Saturday as Chelsea went to Barcelona and beat them in the first leg of their Champions League semi-final. Woo! Second leg's coming up at Stamford Bridge this Saturday. And Totally Football Show European Edition will be out on Tuesday, quite possibly discussing Inter becoming champions again. They face Milan in the derby on Monday night, and a victory there will seal that. There's also the Clasico, Lyon against PSG, loads of other things as well, and loads more. Now, Premier League, Arsenal 2-0 winners at Wolves on Saturday, and Liverpool 3-1 winners at Fulham on Sunday, which means those two teams are now back a point clear of Man City, who have a game in hand. Down the other end of the Premier League, Everton beat Forest 2-0 on Sunday. Not much to talk about from that game. Luton lost 5-1 at home to Brentford. Burnley won 4-1 at Sheffield United, increasing their chances of this unlikeliest of comeback bids. There's only 3 points between them now in 19th place and Forest in 17th. Elsewhere, you had Crystal Palace handing West Ham a 5-2 hammering on Sunday, and Villa beating Bournemouth 3-1. Midweek, there's loads of games, principally Arsenal-Chelsea on Tuesday and the Merseyside derby on Wednesday. Woo! Featuring Everton, who are very much part of the first game that we're going to talk about. Everton 2, Nottingham Forest nothing.
McNeil. Dwight McNeil hits it! Time this season
Dwight McNeil making it 2-0. And that's all everybody was talking about after the final whistle in this game. Well done, Everton.
Before we get into the madness, we should probably point out that Everton score 2 long-range goals. Mm-hmm. And there's no Nottingham Forest player within 5 yards of either of McNeil or Gay when they strike those balls. So...
Are you a Luton fan?
No. There needs to be a little bit of ownership that they defended those situations poorly.
Right.
But I can understand why they're aggrieved about certain decisions, yeah. But the way they've expressed that is maybe not the best.
They've crossed the line.
They've crossed the line. Okay. They've jumped the line.
Have they? Right. That gag, the first of the two goals from Idrissa Gueye was the 100th shot. This was on Sky's coverage that he's taken from outside the box in his Premier League career. Only the second that itself has crossed the line. So well done to him. Anyway.
So you don't give up.
Yeah. Now, so Nottingham Forest tweeting, if that's still the verb, after the game, 3 extremely poor decisions, 3 penalties not given, which we simply cannot accept. We warned Pogmo that the VAR is a Luton fan before the game, but they didn't change him. Our patience has been tested multiple times. NFFC will now consider its options. Boom. Okay, I mean, so many questions here. What are their options? 1. And 2, is this basically unprecedented in English football? A club coming out and saying referees are corrupt?
I think to this extent, for a Premier League club, I mean, on the consider their options, didn't Liverpool say something similar
after the Spurs thing?
Yeah. Which obviously was different, and I think people had sympathy with them. But yeah, obviously this is a whole other level because they are pretty explicit. It's not like this is implied.
It feels like a threat.
It feels like a threat.
What are they going to do, join the Scottish Premier League?
I mean, and it's explicitly suggesting that the VAR was biased.
Right, yeah.
I mean, it's an extraordinary thing to accuse someone. Like, you're completely questioning their professionalism.
So I believe that Marianakos with Olympiakos has previously threatened to leave a league. We've seen Fenerbahce, mm-hmm. who've had analogous complaints about the VAR in Turkey to the extent that they have now brought in foreign operators for VAR in the Super League. And again, it was put to their fans in an extraordinary AGM, that
could
should be one of
the league, I believe, didn't
they? Yeah, that they posited whether we should start the process of finding another football league that actually wants us. But yeah, this is extraordinary.
The first time I felt that this situation was getting out of hand was when Mark Clattenburg appeared in the mix zone after the Liverpool defeat with the drop ball situation. And then there was also, you know, the complaint about Ivan Toney moving the foam and all that kind of stuff. But that when Clattenburg appeared in the mix zone, it really felt like they were waging some sort of PR campaign against referees. But I think Pogmo have got themselves in a slightly tricky situation because I really respect the fact that Howard Webb has tried to be as transparent as possible about the processes that referees take to reach the decisions that they do. And, you know, they've released the audio from VAR. But there's so many subjective calls in football. Lots of teams and lots of fans feel like they're owed an explanation for every single decision. There are some things that are going to be right and there are some things that are going to be wrong. You're never going to get 100% of decisions right in football. But to come out and make that complaint is just, it's just a ridiculous situation.
Before they tweeted, watching the game, I think everyone would have felt there is something pretty weird though about the fact that you had 3 incidents, all involving Ashley Young,
yeah,
all of which looked like pretty strong penalty calls, none of which seemed to get much of a review from VAR.
Danny Murphy made a good point on Match of the Day 2 where you can clearly see with the third incident where Ashley Young takes out Hudson-Odoi,
right.
Clearly see Anthony Taylor make a motion where he says Ashley Young's got the ball. So clearly the video assistant referee Stuart Atwell should be saying... You need to go to the screen and look at this because the replay show, and it's not like you need to forensically analyse this replay. There's right. one particular angle, it's quite obvious. You need to go back and look at it. So, that definitely needs to be questioned why that wasn't the case.
Right. The other two were a handball, which, you know, could have been given, and a touch on Giorena's heel in the box, which you would normally see resulting in a spot kick. So you can understand why Forrest was so... furious, and if you are furious, and if you do feel that you're being systematically denied things, then I guess as a football club, what choices do you have? Is that...
It feels like there are better ways to go about this.
What would you do?
not tweet and
no, but I'm just curious. What do you do? I mean, they have at least force from a Forest perspective, or from the perspective of whoever put this tweet out. Whatever now comes, they have now force a level of scrutiny onto the way that these things are happening that maybe they felt was necessary.
I think some people would think you do this in private anyway, and right. You have very forceful conversations.
Maybe they have.
Or if you are going to tweet it, I think it's one thing, say, I think they would have had some sympathy, there would have been some sympathy or more sympathy towards them if they'd said, like, what have we just witnessed today? Like, how are these decisions going against us? Like, you know, leave aside your, you know, fan rivalries, whatever. Just watch these incidents and tell me how we haven't got any penalties here. I think to then bring in, to kind of make it personal about the VAR.
Right.
The issue there is that a lot of people are going to look at that and be like, I'm sure he's not a sort of Luton fan who's desperate, who's like waging war on Forest, especially as he could have then just waged war on Everton, because they're also
rivals. You probably look at the table and go, the team we're more likely to be ending up above is. But it is such a. I mean, it's, thank you for giving us this phrase, VAR is a Luton fan.
This tweet feels like it hasn't been legaled, for starters. And the VAR is a Luton fan takes what. It can be a very credible point about the systemic problem of British refereeing.
It's up there with Skynet is self-aware.
Yeah,
and Hal can't let you do this, Dave.
Yeah.
But it takes what could be a very credible point about the wide-ranging issues of problems affecting refereeing across the Premier League and makes it a very, very personal grudge.
Exactly.
And that's the bit that I think makes... You know, if Jamie Carragher said they were like a fan in a pub.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes it go from a very credible argument or the beginnings of a credible argument to just very personal sniping.
Yeah.
So Forrest say that they raised the issue of Stuart Atwell being, who was the VAR official, being a Luton Town supporter with the Pog Mole. But in The Athletic, or at least The Athletic's Daniel Taylor, happened to independently contact Pog Mole about this potential conflict of interest on Friday, I think. Is that right, Jay?
I believe he contacted them in advance and they got back to him on Friday and said that...
Clattenburg had been in touch.
That they were fine with it and it might get raised in Nuno's press conference, and it didn't get raised in Nuno's press conference.
But they said that Forrest had been in... They contacted Forrest and Forrest said they were fine with it.
Yeah, well, I think essentially, yeah. I think that the suggestion was that Forrest were aware of it and Clattenburg was fine with it.
Mm.
Yeah, the response from PGMOL was pretty emphatic that Mark Clattenburg had A, told Howard Webb he didn't have a problem with Atwell, in brackets a Luton fan, being VAR, B, merely flagged up that it might be raised at Nuno's Friday press conference. It wasn't.
We should also point out that...
Should say as well, that's just what they're... we don't know, you know, the whys and the wherefores. That's what...
Should PGMOL also say that since that statement, Mark Clattenburg's written a column in the Daily Mail and kind of doubled down on that rhetoric and, you know, called it a hat-trick of howlers, and there's a bit of a long-standing, I don't know if you call it rivalry or beef, between Mark Clattenburg and Howard Webb. And he says things, well, if I was in charge, I wouldn't let these things happen. You know, they need to be much smarter and things like that. So that only adds to the ridiculous nature of it, because now it's like two people who used to be friends or used to be colleagues and now have put this grudge match into the public eye.
I didn't know there was this long-standing rivalry between Howard and Mark.
Clattenburg's book is... very Partridge esque.
Needless to say, I had the last
one. And it's just reeling off of various grudges. Jay, your point about Harry Webb's work with PGMOL, of talking about extra clarity. I think one of the problems is, as a football fan, or as football fans, we do need to get better at referees going, sorry, I messed up, and just being okay with that. And you shouldn't, you know, the quote about you should never assume malice when incompetence will do.
Totally.
Yeah. There's been a lot of incompetent refereeing decisions.
So I'm just going to say, I think the whole thing about VAR is that the premise was, we will interrupt your game, we will destroy the free-flowing nature and spontaneity of your celebrations, but in return, we will give you an end to that potential incompetence. And the fact that it hasn't done any of that, for me, is further reason why we should just
100%. But I think a couple of things on that. One is that football as a sport doesn't have kind of objective truth always.
Subjectivity is written into the rules.
Exactly. There just are going to be situations where there isn't a right answer necessarily. And by the act often of giving the foul or whatever, it becomes a foul. That's kind of how it works. But also, and because I'm fully with you, I think we were sold, and I think naively we accepted this idea of kind of omniscient ref bots. That's kind of how it was, you know, even the fact that we talk about the VAR or just VAR have said this, it conjures up the image of a kind of robot. It's a system. It's not just what it is in reality. It's just the same blokes you thought were incompetent. Well, they're now in Stockley Park making the decisions. Then they don't have any more. They're not anything other than that. Right. But also they would say, and I think this is right, where you are able to quantify decisions, they have increased the correctness of decision by a couple of percentage points.
Okay.
So if that's what you want, if you want more accuracy, you're getting that. You're ruining kind of the fabric of the game. And also, like you say, there are still all these howlers. And that is fundamentally why it's been such a disappointment.
Indeed. Well, we'll see what happens to Forest in terms of disciplinary proceedings. FA or whoever the relevant body would be have announced that they are looking into this. But speaking of controversial decisions from that game, Sean Dyche not wearing a suit. What's going on with that? What does that say?
Going back to basics.
And it's working. Second win in 16 for the Toffees. Shout out to Jordan Pickford, who made a great stop on Chris Wood when it was still 1-0. And Everton look pretty much okay now. Is that right?
I don't think you can say they're out of the woods yet.
I think they probably need...
Still got a game in hand, though.
Maybe one more win and I think they'll be fine.
Right. Who's their next game against?
Liverpool, and then they've got Brentford next Saturday.
Oh, Brentford.
And then they still need to play Luton, don't they? Everton. Yeah, or is it not?
Yeah, they've got Liverpool at home, then Brentford at home, then Luton away, then Sheffield United at home, and then they finish against Arsenal. Who knows what that game might represent? As for Forest, they've got Man City at home next. Then Sheffield United away, then Chelsea at home, and then Burnley away. That could be a big game, eh? Forest against Burnley, at Burnley on the final day.
The only thing with Burnley is that their goal difference is quite bad. And I think they've got Manchester United next. Their fixtures
Newcastle, Spurs, a little bit harder. Away, Newcastle at home, and Spurs away are the next three for Burnley.
Can I give you my little Burnley stat?
Yeah.
So 26% of their Premier League points this season have come from their two games against Sheffield United.
Right.
Wow.
More than a quarter.
Okay.
So can we play you every week, but more a kind of genuine request than a taunt?
5-0 in the home fixture and 4-1 at Bramall Lane this Saturday. One defeat in seven as well for Vincent Kompany's Clarets.
It's all kind of since he dropped James Trafford as well and brought in Muric.
Although Muric himself contributed to, what, five points?
He has produced a few clangs. But I think...
Think it's on? There's only 2 points between them and Forest in 17th.
There's 3 points between them.
Oh, 3 points, is it?
Yeah, I mean, just because they've got... So Forest's goal difference is minus 18 and Burnley's is minus 32. And it's that tight that it very much could go down to two teams finish on the same amount of points.
Yeah. And that goal difference, as you say, Burnley's minus 32, minus 18 for Forest, minus 28 for Luton. Crikey. As for Sheffield United, what's their goal difference? Minus 57. They are now one goal short of the record for goals conceded in a 38-game Premier League campaign.
They could get the 42-game record as well. Swindon's 100. I mean, you'd expect the rate they're going, they'll definitely get.
Well, they're on 88 at the moment.
Yeah. So they need 13-5. They should get that. They're definitely tracking for it.
Excellent. Luton are the other team in this kind of triumvirate of trouble. Burnley, who still hold some hopes, and Forest, who we've just heard about, but Luton, who were the team who, for all their paucity of points down the bottom end of the table, had always been in games, always looked like threatening. Yeah. But no longer this time around. 5-1 the defeat at home to Brentford. What is Brentford's biggest win in the Premier League ever, Jay? You were there for it.
Yeah, and coming into this over the last couple of weeks, this has kind of been penciled in Brentford's diary calendar, whatever you want to call it. As a game, they kind of had to win, or at least had to not lose. Everybody expected it to be a really tricky encounter. You know, Brentford, before they beat Sheffield United last week, were very much still in the relegation conversation. And, you know, Luton could have dragged them back into it, depending on how Saturday went. And they just got completely blown apart. I don't want to say Luton rolled over, but for a team who's scrapping for survival, I just didn't really see them offer any fight. There was certainly a few moments in the first half where Doughty and Chong got down into some nice positions on the left. But after Brentford were 2-0 up by half time, and really, even at that point, it could have been 3 or 4-0, they never looked back. And some of the lackadaisical moments from Luton's defenders, from their midfielders. I think Rob Edwards made quite a couple. I think he took off a centre-back at half-time, which is never a good sign, you know, basically saying you've mucked up here. But Brentford just were completely all over him and didn't look back. And, you know, after it was 2-0 up, Brentford fans were chanting, we're staying up. By the 65th minute, they were allaying when, you know, their players were passing it around. It was just, for Brentford, the perfect day. For Luton, it must be a real kick in the teeth.
Yeah, absolutely. So 1 point behind Forest. Brentford now safe, mathematically, is
I think
that right?
So. Not mathematically. I think there's probably still a very slim chance they could get hauled in, but I think it's less than 2% chance they get relegated. And also they've got, well, Ivan Toney's not played in the last couple of games. He's got a bit of a hip injury, but Ethan Pinnock started for the first time since February in this game. That's been really important. They've got Sharda back. He's now got a goal and assist in his last two games. Keane Lewis-Potter, who's someone they've got high hopes for, scored. This has become, I think, the first Brentford player other than Ivan Toney to score 10 goals in a Premier League campaign. It's like all of their injured players have kind of come back all at once and given them the boost that Thomas Frank hoped for.
Brilliant. Who are Brentford facing next?
Everton at Goodison Park on Saturday. So that should be good fun.
Spicy.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. 5:30 kickoff as well, so.
Crikey. 5 games unbeaten now for Brentford. Luton, since we're doing everyone's games coming up, I've got Wolves away next. Then they also face Everton. That's at home. Then they got West Ham away and Fulham at home. All right, we've got other things to talk about from the weekend, not least the title race. So we'll get onto that next.
We're all driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. According to their own survey, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. Remember the last time you were hiring and how slow and overwhelming it was? Well, you don't need to go through all that again. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent. And because you listen to the Totally Football Show, Indeed is going to give you a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/totally. That's Indeed.com/totally. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed at Indeed.com. You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Football Content Awards International Podcast of the Year.
Now Rooney. And Percy making a trademark run again. And what a ball to pick him out. And what a finish. A magnificent goal by Robin van Persie.
April 22nd, everyone, still. On this day, 11 years ago, what happened? What's this, the 11-year anniversary of? Oh, Carl knows. Go on, Carl.
Manchester United, last winning in Premier League. Last Robin van Persie. His hat-trick against Aston Villa.
Do you know what? It's pertinent as well. Ooh. Because at least one, possibly two, possibly three of these goals would have been disallowed for marginal offsides.
Really?
Had VAR existed. Yeah, including... Yeah, I mean, but it just shows,
right,
doesn't it?
Right.
No, but this is the thing. Who cares now? It happened. Yeah. Like, who, or even at that time, yeah. There wouldn't have been, well, maybe a small minority. Pre-VAR, I don't think there would have been Villa fans being like, this is outrageous. You know, they were toenail offsides, including that amazing goal from the Rooney pass was very, very marginal.
Just refresh my memory on this, because we've talked about toenails and that. Wasn't there was it never official? Wasn't there a thing about daylight? What happened to this?
That was never a thing.
Was it not?
No, it was suggested. It was suggested as, would this be a way to improve the offside, but it has to be daylight. But it was one of those things like, but you're still going to have teeny marginal calls.
Of daylight.
Of daylight. Right. It was like, is that daylight? Is that not daylight? It was one of those things that was, it was spoken about.
Right.
It was an idea for a little bit, but it had this disproportionate impact.
Yeah.
So you'd still have years
There's
after
no
it was
daylight.
Mentioned, people being like, but is there daylight? It was like...
Yeah.
don't think that matters. I don't think that ever really matters.
Added an accent to that one. to really push the man in pub opinion.
My apologies. Anyway, that was 11 years ago when Man United had won the title on the 22nd of April, steamrolling the Premier League. Rafa Benitez was Chelsea manager. Wigan were just about to win the FA Cup. Anyway, this year, things look substantially different. And in the title race, you've got Man City, Arsenal and Liverpool. Arsenal and Liverpool, who are now back ahead of Man City, who were busy elsewhere this weekend. Arsenal, thanks to their victory 2-0 at Wolves Saturday evening. And Liverpool with their 3-1 victory in what could have been a delicate fixture at the Cottage. A big boost, the result, but also some key players for Liverpool coming back as well. Thiago Jota and Trent Alexander-Arnold. My word, what a free kick.
Yeah, but also he dropped Salah, which was quite a big call and certainly screwed my FPL team over slightly. But yeah, I think...
Salah came on, and I have to say, you were mentioning strikers don't become, I can't remember what the word is.
Clinical
in a second. But it's funny how strikers often do lose that, almost from what seems like 1 week to another. Certainly from one season to another. And are we seeing that with Mo Salah? He's been awful since he came back.
I think he obviously had that hamstring injury that he suffered at the Africa Cup of Nations. And one of the best things about Salah over the last however many seasons it's been is he's always been available. He's very rarely got injured and he's very rarely picked up muscle injuries. And it's clearly just knocked him off his rhythm a little bit. And sometimes that happens with players when they come back from hamstring injuries. But yeah, certainly he's lost a little bit of that edge in front of the goal. But I think it's always fair to say he has always been a little bit clunky at times with his finishing.
He can be an erratic ball striker.
Yeah.
He can't beat a man though anymore.
Yeah, but I mean, on the finish, like, he's always been a great getter of chances. He's always got so many that he'll miss a couple and it's gone, well, it doesn't matter because he scores another. I think now at the moment, because like you say, he lacks that explosivity, he's not getting as many. So the ones that he does miss, they kind of matter more because he's not then just like, he's not going to score one straight away after. Kind of like the Erling Haaland thing. Erling Haaland misses a lot of big chances, but when he's scoring loads, it doesn't matter so much.
Fair enough. Anyway, sorry to interrupt, because Jay, you were making an entirely different point.
I was just going
to
say that for Arsenal and Liverpool, these were, I think, confidence-building wins after what's happened to them in the Premier League last weekend and what happened to them both in Europe.
Right.
I think they both needed this to just put a smile on some fans' faces to keep that kind of hope of potentially reeling Man City in. And obviously it was the infamous Arsenal going to struggle at Wolves away after... Bayern Munich game that Charlie predicted a couple of weeks ago.
And what did you say, Charlie?
Well, I just thought this would be a really hard game for them off the back of Bayern away.
Right.
I mean, they were helped by the fact that Wolves were missing half their team. I think had Wolves had anything like a full team, I think this could have been a really tricky evening.
It was.
And it still was, even with half a team, it wasn't comfortable.
It wasn't a pretty game. Arsenal kind of just slogged through it and they didn't get the second goal until...
Stoppage time.
94th minute. First goal coming on the stroke of half-time from Leandro Trossard. Do you want to talk about what was going on with that in terms of dynamics?
Well, as in the actual strike of the goal? Because it was described as a Sunday league finish, which I think is really harsh.
Yeah, but Trossard said he was essentially, what, trying to toe poke it or something?
Is that what? I didn't realise.
Yeah, he said he had to hit it with his toe because it goes really far across him.
Right.
So he hits it in this quite unconventional way.
He swerved it into the top.
It is a magnificent goal, but it's very different looking.
If my teammate at Sunday League scored that, I'd be clapping him on the back.
It was funny because he was asked about it and clearly they were trying to get him to sort of say it was scruffy. He just kept being like, yeah, it was a great goal. I was really pleased with it.
He's been phenomenal. I know
he's really important.
The NBA has, you know, the sixth man of the year award, which is you're the best guy off the bench.
And
if such a thing existed in the Premier League, I think Trossard, of all of the mostly substitute options in the Premier League, I think Trossard is probably the best player.
He's a perfect 12th man, isn't he? Because he can play in so many different positions. Numbers-wise, he's better, you know, for goals off the bench this season. He comes on and he's kind of instantly up to speed with a game. Incredibly two-footed. And that was an important goal because the game was kind of going nowhere as it went to half-time. Wolves had actually come the closest with that David Raya save. I think this both for Liverpool and Arsenal, I thought going into the weekend, one of them would drop points. They're both quite hard games. Wolves away, Fulham away.
So the Opta supercomputer, I don't know if it's a Luton fan or not. But anyway, it does change its opinion quite a lot. But at the moment, it's
not after
giving,
this, did it?
Not after it was 62% chance for City of winning the title. Arsenal, 22%. Liverpool on 16. Does that tally with you guys? City, their run in is Brighton away, Forest away, Wolves at home, Fulham away, Spurs away, and then home to West Ham.
They've got some hard games there. I think,
which ones?
Well, I think Brighton away and Spurs away are games. Spurs, you know, they didn't win either of those. Spurs away has been their kryptonite. They don't even score there, apart from the FA Cup game this season. But in the league, they've never scored even at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Brighton away, they drew that game, admitted they were already champions. And I mean, Fulham away. We talked about the fact that Fulham is such a strange team, but that could be one of their good days. But I think they will drop points. I just don't know if the other two will be able to capitalise.
The way Manchester City dispatched Crystal Palace earlier this month.
Game Palace had chances in the first half. I think a better team.
There was just something about the way they went about Crystal Palace that made me think this is the time. You know, there's always that point in the season. City win double digit games in a row, and I just felt that was the beginning.
I can see them dropping points, but I think Arsenal and Liverpool will probably drop more.
Exactly. No, I agree. That's where I am.
Because Arsenal still got Chelsea, Spurs, Man United, and to have to win all three of those games is a big ask, especially when you've got all the noise around them. I just don't really see them doing it.
I think there's a draw in there for City, but I don't think either team will be able to capitalise sufficiently.
I think I'm working on the assumption Manchester City win all of their remaining games of the season.
All right, well, big games coming up midweek, certainly with the trip to Brighton for City, Arsenal, Chelsea, and Liverpool at Everton. Next up, let's talk about the Premier League's last hope in Europe.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Aston Villa, everybody, flying the flag, that lonely flag, on the continent. They're going to be taking on Olympiacos in the Europa Conference League in a week's time, or 9 days or so. But meantime, a 3-1 win over Bournemouth. And this coming fresh from their remarkable extra time victory away in Lille Thursday night. We haven't had a show since that one, actually, so maybe we should comment on the remarkable.
It was incredible.
Femi Martinez.
What did you describe, Carl? The main character of football. Such is his main character energy. He is the
habitual line stepper. Yeah. And so I think the moment the shootout started, I asked, has a goalkeeper ever been sent off in a shootout before?
I was so curious of what would happen.
Because he was not even right on the line. He was so far beyond it. Yeah, I'm a big fan of rugby union, and Richie McGraw used to always start games 5 yards offside, and the referee would say, "Get back in line." And over time, he'd always transgress. And as the game, you know, as the referee kept going, you keep transgressing, keep transgressing, keep transgressing. He'd go back to where he was supposed to be, and then the moment the referee looked away, he'd start transgressing again.
Right.
And that was Emi Martinez,
like stealing a base.
Yes. Yeah. Throughout the entire penalty shootout, he was so far beyond the pale of acceptable behaviour that the referee was threatening yellow cards and very often things to just get in line with how everyone else is supposed to behave. And then the moment the referee looks away, Emi Martinez was again cajoling.
Yeah, it was like a child.
Do you think he knew about the yellow card rule?
He must.
He must have done.
I don't know, because literally nobody
knew.
I had no idea.
But then if you're someone who pushes the line so much, would you know?
I don't know, because he looked worried. When the referee comes over and shows the guy, he looks really, really...
It was so
But then
funny.
The referee's immediately... I can't remember who the Aston Villa teammate was. It Leon Bailey or something? Mm-hmm. He's gesturing to him, saying, no, he's not going to
get Douglas Luiz comes over, doesn't he? And he kind of says to him, it's okay.
But then at the end, equally, there's that moment when he saved when the penalty's not gone in.
Yes, the half
and
jog.
And he starts to do his little dance, but then stops. Like, what does this mean? And nobody celebrates that either.
He's doing a half jog dance, celebrating, and then he looks at the referee just to double check that they're saying
whether he's been on the line.
Yes.
That was amazing.
And then once it's been confirmed, he runs off. He is phenomenal at that very specific thing. But I mean, also this Villa team is very good.
Yeah,
the way they went about.
And he's great. Would presumably you can't make a sub during shootout, right? You'd have had an outfielder just would have had to go and goal in shootout, which would have been amazing because I can imagine that spooking
that
one of the players.
As well. Yeah, he could have picked up a second. Yeah,
yeah.
But anyway,
easily.
They're through to the game with Olympiacos. In the meantime, a 3-1 win over Bournemouth. Bournemouth, who took the lead in this game through Dominic Solanke, then Morgan Rogers, who's got to be one of the bargains of the season. Scoring on the stroke of half-time. Then you had Diaby and Leon Bailey making it 3-1. This is now Villa's best Premier League season in terms of points since the very first Premier League campaign. How about that? They're currently looking pretty good for fourth spot. 6 points clear of Spurs, who do, though, have two games in hand. Very good. The game we haven't talked about yet, the final game from this weekend, is Crystal Palace 5, West Ham 2. Yikes. Palace, first of all, how about their last 8 days or so? Win at Anfield and now putting 5 goals past a London rival. Absolutely
Elise
amazing.
And Eze. Mm.
Yeah.
Back in the team. Yeah. And just phenomenal wing play. I haven't watched enough of Palace since Oliver Larson has come in. But from what I did manage to see with this performance, they look promising.
Goal of the weekend from Eze?
Fantastic, absolutely. My vote as well.
And yes.
Yeah, that was...
I love how he dealt with it. I mean, it was such a... It didn't... When it kind of loops up, you're like, there are so many ways to deal with this quite awkward ball, and he deals it in the most amazing, emphatic way. Good. But yeah, I mean, those two have only played together. This was the 6th time all season. So
really?
That's such a... I mean, and it's such a shame because Palace is such a different team with them both.
I was just going to say, you could argue you got the assist of the weekend as well, because he nutmegs Zuma for Mateta's goal, and that was lovely.
If there's anything that takes a gloss off the victory, it is the injury to Adam Wharton, who, since coming in January, has been very pleasing, very, very pleasing. He just so hopefully that injury isn't too serious, because he was really looking like he's really beginning to put together a nice body of work in that central midfield.
You have Morgan Rogers for Villa as well. Playing really well again. Another guy who came in from the Championship in January. And
8 million from Borough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I loved his goal as well. The dummy. Yeah, the dummy's so good. It's so, it's such a convincing dummy. You can see why the defenders absolutely bought it. And then a great finish. It's all so
Crystal
clever.
Crystal Palace shot well in the Championship.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Eze, of course, and Elise.
Oh, yeah, fair point. As for David Moyes... Oliver Glasner, not a manager that he enjoys coming up against. Of course, Eintracht Frankfurt denied him a place in the final a couple of seasons back. And this result, 5-2, only increasing the chatter about Moyes' future. Mm. Because they do, you know, when your calling card is dull but dependable results-based football, shipping 5 goals against Palace and previously 5 against Newcastle and 5 against Fulham and 6 against Arsenal, and I mean, I could go on. Mm. Yeah.
This is Mikel Antonio has spoken about Moyes' instructions for when they go 2-0 down.
Mm.
And very much they hunker down. And one of the big things about what we're playing on David Moyes is you don't. Okay, the entertainment, but also you're not meant to lose by these 3, 4, 5 goal swings. And that's not happening. I think Antonio also once said that David Moyes told him to not shoot from outside the box, which is also really clarifying. Look into how the West Ham system works.
Moyes' contract runs out at the end of the season, right? So they just have to make the decision of whether he stays or goes, because it just seems to be this perpetual argument about 1 minute West Ham fans want him in, 1 minute they want him out, and results like this
they're
just...
They're more of the former latter minutes.
Yeah, they're so. Probably more towards the latter.
Benji's a Moyes truther, though, isn't
he? Next time he's in, we'll ask him how he's feeling now, as David Moyes points out. European quarterfinals in 3 consecutive seasons, and they were unlucky to come up against probably the most informed team in Europe.
I was just going to say, I completely agree with you, though. If the whole point of if a manager's ethos is to be tight, pragmatic, and to not play the prettiest brand of football.
This is interesting, because pragmatism doesn't just mean defensive football.
Of course.
Pragmatism is, you know, using the tools to the best of the ability to
Fergie
what you have.
Fergie was a pragmatist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, that West Ham squad, the pragmatic view should be play more attacking, because you've got Kudus, make use of those. A pragmatic manager with that current West Ham squad attacks more and does probably have more 4-3 victories than the you know some of the dour victories West Ham have had. I think that is the that will be the big thing for decision makers at West Ham is should we actually get a proper pragmatic manager in the dictionary sense of the word for next season, or do we keep with David Noyes?
I mean, I think as well, it does a lot depend if they are in Europe, which it looks like they probably won't be. If they are, then I think you could make the case he's proven, you know, he's kind of earned the right to have another European campaign because all the other ones have been really good and really fun. If they're not, I mean, again, with I can totally understand why fans might feel thanks for everything, but it's time for something different, you know, just something a bit more exciting. And yes, there's risk baked in there. I mean, West Ham at eighth, that's probably better. They're ahead of Chelsea and Brighton, you know, and Chelsea have spent
although
a fortune.
Chelsea got three games in hand on them.
They do. And Brighton have games in hand, but they may not win them both. But, you know, Brighton are a great side. So it's not like they're doing badly, but I think a lot of fans are just a bit bored of it, want something different.
It's that nebulous thing of entertainment rather than achievement. Because the achievements, most of the achievements are thumbs up, good.
Yeah. And exactly.
Can a different manager with this West Ham squad finish higher than eighth? I don't know.
Yeah.
Can a different West Ham manager with those players play more entertaining football? Is the maybe question mark? And is that worth it?
Yeah, just depends what you want.
Yeah.
Big questions. We don't have the answer to them. Perhaps you do,
deep
listener.
Inside yourself.
That brings us to the end of today's Totally Football Show. As mentioned, there's loads of stuff coming up, not least our European edition, which will be with you in a day's time. And Thursday, we'll review the midweek action. Hopefully, you'll be joining us for that, listener. Many thanks for your company today. And to Jay, and to Charlie, producer Charlie in the booth, Liam and Carl. And I think that's everybody. Me, of course. Yay. do hope, as I say, you'll be joining us later on in the week. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.